and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of one of the largest and oldest wrestling families on the planet.
The Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The Stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the Stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the Stud is here.
Please welcome the creator of the popular 605 podcast and the president of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network, your co-host, the great Ryan Last.
Hello again, friends, and welcome back to another edition of Ron Fuller's Studcast. I'm the great Ryan Last. It's my pleasure to be with you once again as the Tennessee Stud takes us down that road of wrestling history, telling us his personal tales and anecdotes all along the way. And today we've got a rather big show. We've got a big guest, and I'm going to let the Tennessee Stud get right to it. So without any further ado, the man of the hour, the host of the Studcast, the Tennessee Stud himself, Ron Fuller. Ron, we've got a big show today.
Yes, we certainly do, Brian. This one is packed for sure. And, you know, I want to just jump really quick right on. We've got really a special Studcast today for two reasons. And first of all, we got a very rare thing for us, a special guest on a regular Studcast. And this is a great, great guest at that. This is the big cowboy from Oklahoma, Bill Watts, who's going to be joining us live. And he's going to educate us on the second big event in this Studcast, the greatest turn of a heel to a baby face, maybe in the history of the sport. And I'm talking about another big cowboy, this one from Texas named Dusty Rhodes. And we get to pick the brain here today of one of the most brilliant booking minds of all time. Few fans have ever get an opportunity like this to be a part of a wrestling history and to hear it from the man who made it. So we're all saddled up here and ready for an unforgettable experience. And heck, let's just bring him on in. And we're going to ride back in time to 1974, the best year in history of Florida wrestling. Compliments of Cowboy Bill Watts. And Bill, are you there, my man? It's great to have you on.
Well, I'm almost afraid to say anything after that intro. My gosh. You know, if you'd have praised me that much way back then, I just don't know what would happen. My head would have even gotten bigger than it got.
So it's great to have you on, man. It's always good to talk to you. And you know, I'm in all that, man. You are one of the best minds in the history of the sport. And we've been building up here to the turn of Dusty in 1974. And we've reached the point to where we're going to actually get into it this episode. And you were the man that booked it and responsible for it happening and piecing it together. And, you know, I'd like to get your idea and your opinion. I know it's been a long time, Bill, but a lot longer than I really remember, you know. I think it's about 45 years or something like that. So it's, you know, it's kind of hard to remember back that far, but hopefully you still have some thoughts on how that all went down.
Well, thank you, first of all, for everything about that, and for you also telling me where to go look at the match again. I remember the emotion of everything. You know, I'd like to say a couple of quick things here that may not pertain, but will tie in. Eddie Graham was one of the most brilliant men ever in pro wrestling. Brilliant. Unbelievably brilliant. And Eddie had a lot of demons. And during the period of time that I was working with Eddie, he had him under control. And that was really an important thing because I got to spend a lot of time with him. He brought me down there. He gave me an ownership position in his company. That's that was really great, because that's what he decided, that's how bad he wanted to be down there. And so he gave me an ownership position in his company. But I'll never forget one day he said to me, he was complimenting me, and he said, "Boy, you're one of the best guys in the business," and going on and on. He says, "How come you came down here to work for me?" Because he said, "I never even finished high school." And I looked at him, and I said, "Baby, I came down here for one reason." He said, "What's that?" I said, "I came to get my PhD. My PhD in wrestling, and you're the guy that's giving it to me."
Well, and that's just for sure.
How fantastic that was, and that time was, and everything. And Eddie turned the whole operation over to me and said, "If you're going to do it, you got to do it all. You got to book it. You got to make the payoffs to the wrestlers. You handle the talent." And when I got there, they had Joe LaDuke and Dusty Rhodes, and they just about hammered that to death. Both of them great pieces of talent. But, you know, sometimes it's how you book them all and how you put them together. And they had just hammered this thing, hammered it to death. And that they had Texas Death Match, Canadian Death Match, Texas Bull Rope Match. You know, they'd gone through every phase, had gone through it several times. And, you know, with Dusty and LaDuke, it's pretty, you know, they're, in a lot of ways, they were similar. They were big powerhouse, tough guys. And so, no matter what, you're limited in the how far and how long you can go with something like that. And they pretty well beat it to death. So I knew that the first thing I had to do was I had to change that. And naturally, that's going to hurt some feelings. You're always in a tough situation when you come in with the people already there, because they're insecure as far as how they're going to be figured in. And I understand that. But Dusty Rhodes had that talent, and I'd already had some experience with Dusty, and he had that talent, that charisma that was just unbelievable. I mean, you know, that's what you have to identify. You have to identify who has the charisma. And so Dusty was the one, and so he was the one that I decided to go with as far as carrying on between him and LaDuke. I was so fortunate we had Gary Hart come in, and Gary is one of the finest minds in the business. And he had Paksan Nam, who was a Korean, who was really a stellar guy, classy guy. And matter of fact, he was so good at karate, he had a bruise on the bottom of his right hand. He would sit there and bust rocks, not just concrete stones and boards the way you see it. I mean, rocks. And he was a fantastic guy. So we had tons of talent. And then the whole thing with talent is how you use them to get the max out of them, and also keep everybody happy. You know, it's kind of like having three great quarterbacks. Only one of them can play. So we had a lot there going on. And when I looked at that match today, I almost started crying, because it took me back to 1974. And in that ring, the only two people still alive that I'm aware of are myself and Stu Schwartz, the referee. And Stu was one of the best referees in the business. But there were so many things he could do. He could take the ring and set it up and tear it down. He could do it all. And then, of course, Gordon Solie. That was one of the greatest commentators ever in the business, was Gordon Solie. Matter of fact, I later had Jim Ross go study Gordon Solie. I wanted to learn everything about Gordon Solie, and Jim Ross had such a drive to become the best announcer. And Jim did. He learned from watching Gordon Solie. And that was a unique situation down there in the Fort Heslie Armory, is where that match took place. Gordon Solie's son was the videographer for us, and he would go down there and take film of the different matches. And that was back before they had it on tape and they had computer editing. He had to edit everything by hand, and he would put it together, and then Gordon could have, like he had on this, on the one you showed me on YouTube, Dusty Rhodes was doing the commentary. So you could come in and sit there and do the commentary. And naturally, then you could slant it as the athlete, the direction of your persona. And you see Dusty doing a fabulous job in only his style. And that was a great, great, yeah. Eddie Graham didn't wrestle much back then anymore. And Mike Graham was really just up and coming. He was emerging. So here we have this perfect situation. We have all this great talent. We got a ring general like Eddie Graham in the ring. We got Gary Hart outside the ring. We got the hottest new star going, Dusty Rhodes. We got a great, great athlete to have in the mix, Pak Sung Nam. And we got the stage set. And we popped it. We literally popped it. And I'll never forget, we came in, I think, on a, I can't remember, on, you probably remember, on Tuesdays, I believe, or Wednesdays, or I can't remember what day it was that we came in and did the interviews. Maybe it was Wednesday.
Wednesdays, yeah, for board television Wednesday, every Wednesday.
They left it for Miami. And I'll never forget the interviews that we inserted then in the tape. And Dusty made the interview following that, being a son of a plumber, digging ditches and being a son of a plumber. And I'm listening to the interviews as I monitored every single one of them. And goose pimples broke out of my arm. And I knew that we had hit it. We had hit it. And we set the place on fire. We set it on fire. We had talent up the wazoo. I had Eddie Graham to work with on the booking. And he taught me so much. So much. I could go on for an hour just about the things that Eddie Graham taught me. So now when I look at this, Eddie's gone, Mike's gone. Both of them were by suicide. Both of them were by suicide.
Crazy.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, I'll never forget Eddie came and spent a week with me and talking to me about Jesus Christ and the Bible. Now, I wasn't always the best testimony you would see. I oftentimes didn't fit the version that everybody wants to have of a Christian. I wasn't one of these guys that turned the other cheek. If you hit me, I'd knock your head off. I also, my language certainly has always been a little colorful, but I think in our business, we knew who we were talking to, and we used the language that everybody understood. And so, you know, again, I have all these things, same things that everybody else has. The only difference is maybe is I believe in Jesus Christ and I believe in the Bible. And so Eddie was searching. He was searching, and I don't think he ever found it. And then Dusty fell over and died early. And I talked to his wife, Michelle, who was just, she, when Michelle came into his life, that was one of the best things that ever happened, because Dusty had a woman that was what kept him grounded. And then I worked with Dusty's son, you know, a little bit in the business. So when you look at that, and I haven't seen Stu Schwartz, and that brings back memories. And I'm so glad to see that Stu is still living. I'm going to have to give him a holler and just say hi, because I don't know that we ever gave our referees enough praise. And yet they were a very important link in everything that we did in the ring.
Answer.
So that was all there, and we set that thing up. And we had the biggest year bottom line that Florida ever had. As a matter of fact, I think you'll remember, we had it so hot that we had Gary Hart's army, and he left the mustache grow out, kind of like Hitler, and he grew just above his lip, and then he combed his hair that way, and he had a John Brown belt on and stuff, and he had his army, and he had wanted. And it was one of Dusty Rhodes or Jack Briscoe. Jack Briscoe was the world's champion. And we had billboards that we put all around Tampa. That had never been done in wrestling. Never been done. So we did some things that just had never been done. That was where young Dickie Slater, who just recently died, he broke in the business right about this same year when I was down there booking Florida. And Dickie, of course, was one of my favorites because he was so damn tough. A little wild, but gee whiz, if you condemned a guy for being wild or kept him out of the business for being wild, we wouldn't have had anybody.
Yeah, they were all pretty wild back in those days.
Yeah. And so it was just an exciting, exciting time. And that armory was every Tuesday night. Every Tuesday night was the armory. And it was amazing, all the things. We had Dick Murdoch down there. We Bobby Duncan. We had Danny Hodge. We had Tony Charles. Danny Hodge and Tony Charles on a match, and they went 20 minutes to a draw and had a clean match. and had a standing ovation. But I mean, Danny Hodge was probably the world's greatest wrestler when you're talking about shooting in the business. And certainly he was the greatest amateur wrestler of that time. And so we, when you talk about being stacked with talent, we had you, we brought Matsuda out of retirement. We were just loaded.
Yeah. And you it's amazing. And, after you did the angle, they just kept coming. The talent just kept coming. Bob Armstrong and Greg Valentine, Bobby Duncan. I mean, it was a parade of tremendous wrestlers through that territory in 1974. And, that's what I've been talking about in my studcast here for the last few programs is basically what happened in 1974. And you don't see that. That very rarely happens when something explodes like that angle did. And I remember not being able to get all the people in the building night after night after night.
Yeah.
We needed bigger buildings in the territory. None of them would hold them all.
Oh, yeah. We used to have a contest. We booked Eddie Graham in the main event or Dusty Rhodes in the main event as to which one of them sold out earliest. And you remember all that, certainly. And you were promoting West Palm Beach. And
yep,
we exploded that too. But I'll never forget a big name piece of talent called me and he wanted to come in, but he wanted all these guarantees. And I said, well, I just can't guarantee you anything. You know, you can come here like everybody else and we'll give you the opportunity and we'll display your talent and we'll work things with you. But, then you have to produce. We don't do guarantees. He said, well, I can't come without it. He said, I can go to so and so and such. I said, well, you better go ahead and take that. I'd also hate for you to come here and then think I've talked you into it and you missed that great opportunity you're telling me about. So you need to go ahead and go
there.
Yeah,
and he probably would have made more money there in 74 than wherever he's talking about going to getting the money. So.
Well, I know that from about the second or third match on every one of our cards, they would have been a main event in any other territory.
Yeah.
And I told Eddie Graham, I said, my gosh, Eddie, I got all these main eventers. I got these cards to stack. I don't even know what to do with all of them. And then he looked at me, one eye, he had the other one was a glass eye. And he said, I was looking for answers. And he said, well, you just keep doing what you're doing. Cause he said, we got more talent we've ever had.
And he certainly wasn't. He was telling the truth about that. I mean, it was extremely loaded. I never worked any place that had that many top guys ever before or after that year. Just a tremendous job there, and you brought in tremendous talent. The angle with Dusty just exploded. I'd never seen that before either. I don't know if you had or not, but that to me was probably the biggest explosion of an angle that I'd ever been around, I'd ever been involved with. And it was just amazing to be a part of it. And, just happy as heck to have had the opportunity, man, to work under you and learn from you. And just to continue my career and be able to fall back on some of the things I saw you do in 1974.
Well, the key thing as a booker, because you had to learn this too, because you became a promoter, booker, as well as a wrestler, was, when you were working an angle for yourself, it was not hard for you to put all your energy into it because you were thinking about yourself and your career and your money. But when you were booking a territory, you had to learn to put as much energy in every single other angle that you were introducing, just like it was an angle with yourself. You couldn't slide it. And so that was a tough thing for a lot of guys to learn. There was a lot of great territories where the owners or the guys that homesteaded it, everything was done for them and not a lot for somebody else. And a lot of those guys on top really held people back that had great talent, because they were afraid that they would take away from themselves, from them. So one key thing when I took over as the booker, but I was also a main event wrestler, as Eddie said, book yourself in whatever main events you want, but don't ever make yourself the only main event. So in other words, he was telling me, be sure you feature others.
Yeah.
Well, I knew I had to do that. I knew I had to do that. But I still kept myself good enough, just like when we came to West Palm, we were able to pop West Palm. And so, you know, it gets to be a thing about ego. I'll never forget just an inside to this when I took Dick Murdoch back to Oklahoma with me when I was going to go back and take over that territory, which I already owned part of. And I started building Dick Murdoch, and I was the big star. I was the established big star. And I built Dickie Murdoch, and I shot a big angle with him. And when we came out of the building, everybody ran right by me to Dick Murdoch wanting his autograph. And the first thing that hit me, I said, well, by gosh, I'll show them who the star is. I'm not going to have this. It got my pride. It pricked my pride. And I went back to my motel room, and I sat there in front of that mirror, and I looked at that mirror. You know, everybody's got a magic mirror on the wall. The person in it is you yourself. And I said, mirror, mirror on the wall. I didn't say that, but I was looking at that mirror and I said, okay, you big dummy, get your ego in check. You have just done what you wanted to do. You now have Dick Murdoch where he can sell out any venue and you don't even have to be on the card. Guess what? That gives you some time off.
Yeah.
Now your next deal is, start building the next guy that's going to come up to be Murdoch's level so that it doesn't let Murdoch be in a position where he can dictate terms to you.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of a balancing act. And, you know, I haven't owned my own territory and done the booking too. You don't really want to be the only star. I liked it when I could get somebody over that was hotter than I was, and I could go back. I could take some time off.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, because, you know, and that's what a lot of people don't understand. When you own your own business, you don't get to leave it at 9 to 5.
No.
It's with you 24/7. And so if you get a situation where all of a sudden you might can be home for a holiday, man, that's called great.
Yep, it sure is. Well, Bill, you know, I appreciate you coming on, man. Told you I wouldn't keep you on here long. And gosh, we could do this for another 2 hours. You know, and for everybody out there who's listening, Bill did a super stud cast with me, number 11. And what a fantastic program that was, Bill. And had so many great comments about it. And for fans out there, if you've never listened to that one, that is a really great program. Bill, you're just a unique individual, one of the brightest guys probably ever in the history of the business, and accomplished so much. And, you know, it's always a pleasure, man, just to talk to you and especially to have you on a program like this. There's a lot of fans here that are old school fans that, you know, this is really a pleasure for them to get an education from somebody who did it like you did it for all those years.
Well, thank you a lot. And, you know, I value our friendship. We, you know, but good friendships like ours are not high maintenance. You may not see each other for years and years, but you can pick off like you'd just been together the day before because it's a real friendship and it's based on respect. And so you're one I've always, always respected and cared for, and I got to see you become the person that you could be, and that's a special time too.
Well, so I appreciate that.
We'll do it again if you need it.
All right, thank you very much for being with us today. A great pleasure for everybody out there, certainly for me too, and thank you so much, Bill.
Okay, bye-bye.
We will return with more of the Studcast in just one moment, but first a word about the Continental and Southeastern The Lost Territories DVD set, as well as the latest Super Studcast, Super Studcast number 13.
Things are moving as fast as a runaway horse for the stud. The Southeastern and Continental Wrestling Lost Territory DVDs are a smash hit. Reviews from all over the world rave about the 67 matches and 12-plus hours of classic old-school memories. At tnstud.com, click Stud Store. Don't miss this opportunity to own a piece of wrestling history and see 1970s bonus matches and a present-day interview from Ron Fuller on each of these fabulous five DVDs. Only $39.99 for all five, and shipping is free at tnstud.com. And the Tennessee Stud is finally telling his side of the Knoxville wrestling war story of 1979. Wrestling history from 40 years ago about one of the most controversial wars of all time at tnstud.com or patreon.com/studcast. Only $2.99 for 3 hours from the man who lived it and wrestling's greatest storyteller.
There you hear it. Super Studcast number 13, part one of our look at the Knoxville Wrestling War of 1979, as well as The Lost Territory, Southeastern and Continental, the DVD set, all available at tnstud.com, and for the Super Studcast, available at patreon.com/studcast, only $2.99. It's a steal of a deal, if I may say so myself. Check that out right now. We'll have more information about that at the end of the show. Ron, before we continue on with the Studcast, I know you have something you wanted to do today for the listeners, and we're going to do it right now. We have a little bit of classic audio of the angle we just talked about, Dusty Rhodes' big babyface turn in 1974 in Florida. So let's go to this clip right now from 1974. Here is Dusty Rhodes and Pak Sang Nam against Mike and Eddie Graham, and you'll notice some familiar voices on commentary.
This, of course, early in the match, Graham delivering
a... See, wait just a second. See what's going on now. Look at me. It's so quick. Up, somebody got hung on me there. See, the thing is, Eddie Graham is a little smarter than I thought he was. Look at here, Pak Sang, the Korean from Korea, brother. Look at him.
Graham very effectively blocking that powerful right hand of Pak Sang that's caused so much devastating damage in professional wrestling, including putting Don Morocco out of professional wrestling for 3 long months. Graham keeping that arm tied up. The referee checking Pak Sang, trying to see if he wants to concede. Graham putting a lot of pressure on him.
See, I'm telling Pak Sang, because I know how to get out of this. Take me maybe 30 seconds to get out of this hole, have him on his back, strumming his girdle with my ugly knuckle. That's how long it take me. Pak Sang don't seem to have the key.
Gary Hart, the manager, issuing advice, and Graham continues to hold the upper hand on this Korean Pak Sang.
Pak Sang still trying to find himself. Look at him. It's the fourth quarter, and the dude still can't find the football. Look at him now. Can't get out of it. If he just tagged me, I could beat them both.
Graham forcing Pak Sang down, and you're looking somewhat...
I'm going to tell you what's happening there. Gary Hart is yelling at me, brother. Nobody, even my daddy, yelled at me when I was working 8 years old in a plumber's ditch. Nobody hollered at me, baby. He's getting on my nerve now.
Young Mike Graham acquitting himself very well here against Pak Sang. And, of course, it was young Mike that spelled the difference a little bit later on. There's Mike getting behind his man and, of course, maintaining a very defensive posture. And now Eddie Graham coming in, those fists double, and here's a man who's got the hardest punch in wrestling history, and you're pretty well aware of it, Mr. Rhodes.
Yeah, I'm aware, but see, I'm trying to lure him in. Got him now. Got him going where I want. Whoa. Got him just about where I want him now. Trying to set him up. He's beating on my gourd a little bit. Got him down. Got him slowly. This whole tape, I don't know, is just getting ready to bust into so much excitement here. There is Pak Sang supposed to go in and do some damage.
Graham blocking, and you can see the stinging fury of that punch against his hands. He blocked them. Pak Sang moves in again, and now Graham taking desperate measures to protect himself against this man, Pak Sang, and Gary, and a looping hand and another one, and Pak Sang is staggered. Ooh. And here's where your team is in serious trouble, Mr. Rhodes.
Until the man tags the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, going well on his good here. Up got sidetracked just a second.
Mike Graham keeping you off, and Pac Song able to connect that time. Connects again with Eddie Graham, and Graham has been lacerated. Pac Song still limping after that leg hold that had been applied by Mike Graham, and now Pac Song has Eddie Graham in a lot of trouble. Graham is staggered. He goes to the canvas, unable to get over for the tag.
But now, seeing this, I want to show you now, this, brother, is where reality begins. Right here is what it's all about. The greatest sport in the world. Right here is what it's all about. Violence. A man against man, one-on-one. No pads, no shoulder pads, no nothing. Pounding his gourd, beating his noggin. Beat Eddie Graham and beat Mike Graham myself right here. And now I'm going to give Pac, watch it now, giving Pac Song the chance to be a star, the chance to beat Eddie Graham alone. I'm giving the man a chance right here. You see, Gordon, what's happening here, and I got it all lined up. And you see what's going to happen here, Gordon. Watch this Korean right there, brother. Nobody, no dude. It's the American dream, baby. Nobody crosses me. Nobody crosses Dusty Rhodes. Now, time. At this time, baby, my life, everything, see, life is full of first times, baby. And now I got to do something for myself, for my pride, for my daddy, for everybody that was associated. Now I got to get off that floor, baby, go in that ring and beat up 4 men. You understand what I'm saying? I done beat up Graham. Now I got to go in right here. I'm going for one reason, baby. And that's to whip that honky Korean's head, because I am the dream. I am the man. Go on with it, baby. Right there. Come and get it, baby. And right now, too, I'm taking the heart of the people in this city, people of all over. This ain't local, baby. This is real. Right here is reality. Honky Gary Hart with his flat feet, semi-professional wino from Chicago. Right here, backing off of it. Now I'm doing my thing. The roar is louder. My heart is pounding. And now I'm not only doing it for me, baby. I'm doing it for 6,000 people in the Fort Hesley Armory. And right here, I've got another sneak attack. Pearl Harbor. And now I want to show you something that's very dear to me. This piece of tape. This piece of tape, baby, is worth a lifetime of things. Because this shows a man, not a boy. Not a boy trying to be something he ain't, but a man raised by a man, brother. And Mike Graham becomes a brother right here.
Well, there we hear it, some classic audio from Florida in 1974 on one of the biggest angles of all time, a transformative angle for Florida wrestling. And that, of course, is the babyface turn of Dusty Rhodes. Ron, let's go back to that night. Where were you? Were you watching it go on? Were you in the locker room taking off your boots? Where were you when this was actually happening?
Oh, my gosh, man. I'm watching this. You know, I know this is coming. You know, I didn't know actually it was going to be this particular match. But, you know, Bill and I were spending a lot of time together. We were wrestling partners quite a bit during this time frame. And we talked a little business. And he, you know, says we're going to turn Dusty, and I thought it was a great idea. I saw the same things in Dusty that he saw in him, and he just explained, you know, what he thought about Dusty, and we were kind of on the same page. So, you know, this I wanted people to, when they listen to this audio, I really wanted them to pay particular attention to the fact that that Dusty, you can hear Dusty talk over this, and he himself gets excited just watching what happened out there and how he was accepted by the crowd when this turn actually happens. And that's a real strong point for a wrestler. You know, I switched many times from babyface to heel, several different times in several different territories, and vice versa, back the other direction. And it's a very concerning thing for you when you're a wrestler and you're over and they start talking to you, or you start thinking about, in my case, I'm booking, you start thinking about turning yourself. And you never know what's going to happen. There's no guarantee that you're going to do it properly and that the crowd's going to eat it up and that they're going to accept it. Guys like Dusty, and to my knowledge, Dusty had never been a babyface in his entire career. And now he's about to become a babyface. And what happens is I did this myself a few times. I'm on the way to the ring and I'm still asking myself, when I do this, am I going to get the pop I want or what happens if I don't get the pop I want? If it works, you're going to be a stronger star than ever. You're going to be over better than you ever were. But if it didn't work, you're going to maybe be looking for someplace else to wrestle because you've maybe killed yourself. And it's a pretty strong thing. I can imagine Dusty's thoughts at this time about, he knows he's got the ability to make this happen, but he's got to depend upon the crowd getting into it and buying in. And they bought in this match. I love the audio in there when Dusty finally starts to make that comeback. And for those that want to watch that match, it's on YouTube. You can see when I'm standing up there in the balcony above all the crowd watching that match, and Dusty makes his first run at Pac Song. You can see the new Dusty. It's a whole new guy. His image, his body movements, everything changed in an instant when that crowd responded to him. Not with boos, but with this giant roar. And the longer he was in there, the more he danced, the more he strutted, the more he did that Dusty thing. And it just was fantastic to watch. And that's what it's all about. Back in the day, I don't care, even if it's in this day and time, I don't think they can do it anymore, to be honest with you. They cannot get the crowd as into it as they were back in that time frame in the 70s and 80s. And it was just a pleasure to stand up there on that balcony and watch it. I think Bill said something about goosebumps. And by golly, I got them too. It was hard not to get them. It was a spectacular thing to see.
We are really lucky to have this audio that it still exists because there is so much wrestling footage that is lost to time. You and I have talked about this off air in the past. Many territories wiped off the map when it comes to footage. There's very little footage in perfect quality, or in some cases, there's no footage at all. And in this case, we do have this and the audio of Dusty and Gordon Sully. But one of the things missing, one of the things that no one apparently has a copy of, is Dusty's first babyface promo, not the voiceover, but the promo itself. What do you remember about that, if you remember anything? Were you there when he cut the promo? Tell me about that day.
Oh, yes, I was. I was, Brian. And it was unbelievable. Tampa ran on Tuesday nights. They did the television on Wednesdays. And if you were filmed, and they were filming different matches every week, it was one of the first. They were way ahead of their time as far as their television production. They would film these matches and then have people talk over them like this one with Dusty. And you got Gordon Sully there. I mean, gosh, he's the master. So you've got that opportunity. If you were on one of those videos, you went in early. They were called voiceovers. So they would say, come in early tomorrow and you're going to do a voiceover on the match you had tonight. So this voiceover happens early in the morning. Dusty goes in there. Now he's turned the night before. He doesn't really know what the reaction of the people are going to be when they come to TV that day. But the interviews, way that television was set up there is you did the voiceovers. Then you went in and you did actual interviews for 7 different television stations in the state of Florida. They went back and put those interviews into those programs before they shipped them out on Wednesday nights. And then they brought the people into the actual studio, the Sportatorium, and the crowd was there. So in this particular day, Dusty's already done this voiceover that we just heard the audio from, and they have him do something that was very unusual. They have him do a live interview. Now you've got the crowd there, and it was just absolutely unbelievable what happened it was amazing to me. And to the best of my recollection, let's just go. I've got memories of this because it affected me so much as a young guy and seeing this happen. It was what I needed at that point in my career to set me up for owning my own company, because I got to see something like this done and see it get over like it did. So the best of my correction, I want to kind of do Dusty's interview as best I can. You know, I don't want to do the Dusty's, you know, I could do it in the way and talk like him, but, you know, I don't want to go that far because I really don't do the Dusty as, I don't do Dusty credit. I don't do him well enough to be able to feel comfortable with that.
Ron, I must say, that is the very worst Dusty Rhodes impression I've ever heard.
Yeah, I guess it was, you know. That's why I don't do him. So, you know, but I got to, you know, what happened is when he started doing this live interview, and he tells the Virgil Riley Runnels story. That's Dusty's real name, Virgil Riley Runnels. And he tells it from beginning to end. And it was the first time I'd ever heard the story from the beginning to the end of it. And so was a bunch of wrestlers standing with me. We're watching the monitor, not too far off of where the audience is. They can't see us, but we're watching the monitor and listening to this interview. And he starts into the Virgil Riley Runnels stories, and he calls himself the lowly son of a plumber from Austin, Texas. He never had anything as a kid, grew up in poverty. He'd been lucky to be strong. I remember he was saying, and I was always a bully all my life, not caring. Don't give a damn what the wrestling fans like me or not, you know. And then last night, he goes into what happened again. But he's in front of fans this time, a live audience. And he said, last night, I felt accepted for the first time ever in the ring. And he said, I'm humbled. I remember him saying, I'm humbled by the tremendous response. He said, I've always called myself American Dream, you know, because I was born into poverty. And look how far I've come from that, you know. But now, for the first time in my life, he says, I've really, truly felt that I am the American Dream. And he continued. And as he continued, it was unreal to watch. The fans in the building started clapping. They started cheering for him. They actually got on their feet, the whole crowd. They're clapping and screaming. And he continued. He went on a... He said that he talked about the wicked Gary Hart and his goons from other countries and how they had no place in America and how it was now his job to rid the country of the evil. And he wouldn't rest until they were gone. Chill bumps like Bill Watts was talking about. Chill bumps went up my spine. And I'm sure that I wasn't the only wrestler looking at that monitor that had those chill bumps. Something powerful happened that morning to everyone in that sportatorium, including the wrestlers, not just the fans, including the wrestlers. In my opinion, we had just witnessed maybe the greatest interview ever done. It was just unbelievable. And when that program aired on Saturday, following the tape being sent around the state of Florida, I guarantee you that the fans standing were in their living rooms, standing on their feet and clapping and cheering just like the ones that were in that sportatorium. He had them in the palm of his hand. It's an unforgettable moment. And goosebump moment. It's just phenomenal when something like that happens. Amazing.
It was a situation where the fans were ready. They were clamoring for Dusty to do the turn. And when it happened, you could see the video. And obviously, we know the results in the end. It was the right move. And it picked up Florida to all new levels. What happens, Ron, when you have a turn, when you have someone turn babyface, and the fans, they don't care?
Oh, well, you're in trouble. You know, basically, you plan on these things being big, and luckily, I never had to experience that. You know, you put a lot of thought into taking a guy. Dusty's been a powerful heel in Florida for years and years. And if you take him and try to turn him babyface and you do it improperly and it's not bought by the fans, you might as well let Dusty go somewhere else. And so, you know, that's where Watts comes in. I mean, you've got to put a lot of thought in how you're going to do this. And he utilized probably like he talked to us about there. He utilized Eddie Graham, one of the absolute greatest minds, but not just the greatest minds, one of the greatest workers in history. In that ring, the psychology of what had to happen there just was perfect, because there were so many really experienced and tremendous athletes in that ring in that match. And what happens there just turns into pure gold at the box office. And it makes Dusty not just a star. What happens that night in Tampa and that day on television is a star is born right there. Dusty Rhodes becomes a star, and he goes on to be a superstar, and not just in Florida. Dusty has tremendous success when he leaves Florida, and wherever he goes, he still has that persona and that charisma and everything that's necessary to get it done. He was just an amazing guy in an amazing spot. And I was lucky enough to be a part of that amazing crew and that amazing time in 1974 in the state of Florida.
What do you think Dusty had that made him so special and specific to this moment? What do you think, what are the intangibles that Dusty had that were able to get him over the hump and make him that superstar in Florida?
Well, he had so many things going for him. First of all, Dusty was a great seller. You know, people think that, you know, they just want to cheer for the guy that's beating somebody up. But you got to be able to sell before your comeback is meaningful. And Dusty could sell. And he really utilized the fact that he could sell. And when you sell great, you're going to have fabulous comebacks, because those fans have got that sympathy now. They want to see you do something about it. And when you start to do something about it, and when Dusty did something about it, Dusty had his own style. He didn't just hit a guy and hit a guy, and he would back off and he would run across the ring, hit him with the bionic elbow, he called it. Then he would pick him up and slam him, and then he would dance around him, and then he would shake his hips and his head. I mean, it was a show in there. He was like the most entertaining babyface maybe in the history of the sport. Interviews, nobody. Zero. Nobody did better interviews than Dusty Rhodes, in my opinion. He never was able to accomplish it as a heel, because fans don't want a great talking heel. But he got himself over enough. But when he turned babyface, he already had that ability. He just lit it up, man. He went into another world when he started interviewing as a babyface. I remember when we would do these interviews in the morning before the fans came into the sportatorium for these markets around the state. And when Dusty came on to do his interviews, the interviews take 3 hours sometimes. There's a lot of markets, and it takes a lot of time. And guys would get, just lackadaisical and, you know, I'm bored and that type of stuff. There was no boredom when Dusty got on to do his thing. Everybody just watched. Everybody, you know, and I'm a young guy at this point, and I'm just sucking it up. I'm just like, man, wow, I got to do this. I got to learn. I got to get this. And I was just trying my best to do just that, to get it. Another thing Dusty did especially well, Dusty bled a lot. And bleeding is selling. I mean, when you're bleeding, the sympathy is more there than at any other time. You can't do anything more to get sympathy than be bleeding. And he had that blonde hair. And that blonde hair just accentuates the fact that you're bloody. You know, people can see it in the hair. It's more visual. And that in essence just made him a better salesman. You know, he really could get that sympathy with that blood. And like I said, when he made his comeback, he always had them there. They're just begging for it. And when he gave it to him, he gave it to him so good. He just put everything he had into it. It just made for a phenomenal match from the very beginning to the very end. When he comes out of the dressing room during this time frame we're talking about here, things are going to explode. Right after this match, right after this first week that tape goes out, nothing is the same in Florida ever for the next 3 months. I mean, there's no buildings that will hold the people that are trying to get in there. Because it's just magic. It's a magical time. And he makes those great comebacks. He has that unique style. He had great timing, which any superstar has. He knows when to make the comeback. He knows when to sell. He knows how long to sell. He knows how to make the comeback. He doesn't do the same thing continually. He moves from one type of thing. He suplex, and then he'll go to throwing a punch next time, and maybe a knee to the head. I mean, you know, it's just he don't do the same thing continually. For all those reasons, in my opinion, he's just one of the most spectacular baby faces that probably ever wrestled, ever put on a pair of tights.
Well, Ron, as we wrap things up this week, we want to remind everyone that you can become friends with the Tennessee Stud on Facebook. The page, Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud. Just like that page, and all of a sudden, you're friends with a wrestling legend. Of course, you can follow the Tennessee Stud on Instagram and Twitter at Ron Fuller Welch. You can follow me on Twitter at Great Brian Last, and you can hear me on the 605 Super Podcast at 605pod.com or available wherever it is that you find your favorite podcast. Classic wrestling talk and wrestling humor, the 605 Super Podcast. Once again, and I know so many people have reacted so well to this, Southeastern and Continental, The Lost Territory DVD set. Ron, what do you want to say about this? I've heard from so many people who have been falling in love all over again with Southeastern and Continental.
It's just been a delight for me, you know, to having found these things and to be able to put them out there again. And it's just truly amazing about how the compliments people are just saying, wow, it's just taking me back to 30 years ago. And it's, you know, I have not seen one bad comment. I have seen no one that says there's anything wrong with any of the five DVDs. Just spectacular comments. They can't get enough. When's the next one's coming? It's one of those things. And I'm real proud of that. And these are a tremendous example of Southern wrestling and old school wrestling, Continental and Southeastern both, filled with great talent, filled with angles, filled with people that could work and crowds that were enthusiastic and going crazy. It's been a real pleasure to see what's happened with them. And obviously, they can get those things at tnstud.com. And all they need to do is just click on the stud store, and they're the first item that comes up for sale. That's $39.99 for five CDs, and we're going to pay the shipping for you. So it's a pretty phenomenal deal, and really getting a tremendous response from it.
Once again, pick up your copy of Southeastern and Continental, The Lost Territory DVD set, available at tnstud.com. And while you're there, check out the latest Super Studcast, Super Studcast 13, The Knoxville War of 1979. Of course, that's available at tnstud.com, as well as patreon.com/studcast for all listeners and supporters of the Studcast. We intended on doing 2 hours on the Knoxville Wrestling War. We got 90 minutes in and realized there is so much more to go. So this is going to be a two-parter. You're going to get a second part of this, and the story has been amazing so far. I have to say, as the host of the show who does it with Ron, I didn't know exactly where Ron was going to go, and we ended up doing an entire history of Ron in Knoxville, the history of Southeastern wrestling leading up to everything that goes down in 1979. If you care about wrestling history, if you care about the history of wrestling in East Tennessee, you need to check out this show. It's available at tnstud.com or patreon.com/studcast. Only $2.99. It's a steal, and what a fantastic show it is. And on the topic of fantastic shows, Ron, where are we going next week on the Studcast?
Well, you know, we've opened the door here, man. I mean, we've opened the turnstiles. Dusty the Superstar. He's not just a star. He's a superstar automatically. Dusty the Superstar is on the loose. And the crowds, we're going to turn away crowds at every building. There's not a building in the state of Florida that's big enough to hold the demand of the fans that show up night after night. We're going to see more people standing outside trying to get in than can get in. It's just amazing time frame here. And the great part about this is the talent, that's not all here. In fact, they're still coming. Bob Armstrong is going to come and join the crew. Bobby Duncombe's going to join the crew. Greg Valentine, Chavo Guerrero, Lorenzo Perini. I mean, they're just going to come from everywhere. Keep coming. It's a fabulous time for wrestling fans in the state of Florida. And it's a tumultuous time for wrestling, period. I don't know any place in America or the world that experienced something like this. And 1974 in Florida is a trip. That's all I can say.
Well, the trip will continue next week right here on the Studcast. Of course, Ron Fuller Studcast is a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. For the Tennessee Stud Ron Fuller, I'm the great Brian Last. The story continues next week.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic Studcast. The true story continues next week. So fool Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
One, two, three.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.